This is Reset. I'm Susie Yon, in for Jen White. COVID-19 continues to impact our everyday life here in the U.S. and across the globe, especially how we are using our online devices for work, play, and connection. As more people are turning to remote setups, video chats, and live streaming, the FBI is warning of increased cybersecurity attacks. So what cybersecurity risks should you be aware of during COVID-19? And how can you protect yourself from hackers? Joining us now to discuss is information security attorney Alexander Urbelis. He's founder and partner of Blackstone Law Group in New York. Alex, welcome to Reset.
Only a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, how are you holding up right now?
I'm okay. I'm doing all right. I may have had the virus, quite frankly, and sort of coincidentally, I'm isolated, quarantined from my family at our place outside the city. I haven't seen my wife or my kids in about 2 weeks, but I've got my health back, so I'm thankful for that, and I hope I'm on the right track.
Well, here's hoping to good health that continues on. So I want to turn now to your history with the Blackstone Law Group. First, you're a former hacker turned information security attorney. What led you to start Blackstone Law Group?
Well, you know, I was a hacker, but, you know, I think it's important to note that, you know, not all hackers are bad guys, right? Now, hacker used to be a good term, and I still think it should be considered a good term, especially white hat hackers who try to, it's more of a mindset and a sort of philosophy about life than it is about, you know, doing bad things. But yeah, certainly it was my misspent youth that sort of led me down this path. But I'll tell you that we're not your typical law firm, and I'm certainly not your typical lawyer. I went to law school after working full-time in an information security department of a software company in New York, and combining my skill set with information security together with law, I wound up in some intelligence and defense roles and then jumped back into the private sector. When I founded my law firm 5 years ago, we were determined to marry the practice of law together with the practice of information security. And in so doing, over the last several years, I created a threat intelligence platform that I call Omni. And that's how we wound up picking up some really significant attacks against the World Health Organization recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, your service is definitely something that is important now. And as we mentioned earlier, the FBI recently issued warnings of teleconferencing hacking and increased fraudulent schemes related to COVID-19. What kind of cyber attacks are we seeing right now?
Well, we're seeing quite a lot. We're seeing a significant rise in malicious actors targeting companies, VPNs or virtual private networks, any kind of remote services that have been stood up, and really any form of external link into a company's internal systems. What we're also seeing a lot more frequently are phishing lures that are and certainly will leverage interest in the coronavirus and other items of interest, such as the federal CARES program that's designed to put money into the pockets of needy Americans, protect small businesses, et cetera. We're also seeing phishing attacks exploiting other psychological pressure points for us during this global pandemic, such as providing health guidance, treatment information, vaccine availability, infection rates, infection notifications for your area. We've seen a significant amount of phishing lures that are exploiting misinformation about that, quarantine news, distribution of fraudulent workplace procedures that may contain malware, workplace guidance. We've even seen domain names soliciting donations for the Center for Disease Control or local disaster relief ostensibly your donations would go directly to these relief organizations, but in reality, they've been entirely pocketed by fraudsters.
Wow. How would you suggest folks protect themselves against those types of fraudulent schemes?
Well, there's quite a few different ways. I mean, I can't underestimate the importance of multi-factor authentication, or MFA. Having multi-factor authentication in place takes you or an organization from being the proverbial low-hanging fruit to fruit that's sort of quite near the top of the shelf, so to speak. and difficult to reach without standing on a chair. So, I mean, multi-factor authentication, using a password together with some other kind of challenge, whether it's a six-digit code from something like Authy or Duo or Google Authenticator that's also associated with your account. I mean, it can be difficult to implement correctly and quickly for small businesses, but there are services from companies like Google and Duo that can layer on top of your portals pretty simply. And even personal accounts, our personal Gmail accounts, our GMX accounts, whatever they are, they also have the ability to be protected with multi-factor authentication. Upgrading those personal accounts to use MFA is super important. Another really good piece of advice is pretty obvious. Don't reuse passwords or variations of a theme of your password between your work account and your personal accounts. Compromised personal accounts can lead to malware. Malware can lead to compromised devices, and compromised devices can lead right back to your employer's system.
Yeah. Well, folks, more folks are obviously working from home. That means there's a lot of video chat, live streaming. We're also seeing classes moving online and even social and religious events where people are streaming things online. I guess how are people maybe more vulnerable to cyber attacks in this situation? And what risks are associated with, these types of activities of these video chats and online streams?
Oh yeah, certainly. I mean, let's address, the working from home component first. I mean, unless you are listening to this in France, you've probably done some work from home, right? You've been doing a lot of work, and so companies have always had some kind of work from home policy or process or procedure. And so what we're seeing now is a difference of degree, not necessarily kind, right? So workforces have had, people working from home maybe 5, 10% of the time, but now it's 100% of the time. So that means there's more personal devices, more off-premises endpoints, meaning computers, being used to handle and process business-related data, including highly sensitive information like business plans and trade secrets, things that can, that if compromised can represent existential threats to an organization. So companies need to now dedicate more IT resources, support these remote working situations, and deploy things like multi-factor authentication, virtual private networks, cloud-based document management systems. And no doubt, though, that because we are all in such a rush to get this done and secure it so quickly, threat actors, the bad guys, are going to take advantage of this. They're going to be more external links to internal systems, more copies of data on personal devices, and ways that the criminals can get what they're after without actually compromising an organization. So the threat actors are going to be looking for things like configuration errors, lazy passwords, poor identity and access management practices, among other mistakes that, one could easily make when you're in a massive hurry to get several major projects for working from home done. So, the second part of your question, it was really about Zoom, really, and Zoom bombing. Zoom bombing, or I guess you can define this as the act of joining a Zoom conference to which one was not invited. It's become quite the talk of the town. There is a simple fix for this, though. Don't create Zoom conferences without a passcode anymore. Zoom conferences can only be Zoom bombed if they do not have a passcode. So a simple passcode associated with your conference should be enough to keep the interlopers at bay. But it's really important not to reuse these passwords. Zoom has made some real valiant efforts, I have to say, to try to get the word out about these enhanced security procedures. And they even have the ability for conferences to have passcodes automatically generated at the time of initiation.
And
But you
the
know,
other part of that is probably try not to post that Zoom meeting on social media where, anyone could find out what's, where that meeting is taking place.
oh, that's a super important point, Susie, too, because some of the new Zoom meetings are secured by putting the passcode into the URL or into the web address, right? So if you post that web address with the passcode connected to it on social media or on a web page, whatever, you're going to you're going to be in a world of hurt. It's not going to be fun.
Well, you mentioned the threat on the World Health Organization. I mean, last month you flagged a major cyber attack over there. What happened, and how did you spot it?
Well, part of what we do, we're very unique for a law firm, is that, you know, as I mentioned, we married the practice of law together with the practice of information security, and we provide threat intelligence about early stage indicators of cyber attacks for our clients. Now, our clients we're very proud of our client base. They're some of the world's most recognizable companies in finance, healthcare, life sciences, other critical industries. To protect them, we seek out the bad guys. We find their infrastructure. We relay that intelligence ahead of activation to our clients. Now, I had detected malicious activity from the group that had targeted the World Health Organization on 13 March in the past. In fact, I had seen this particular group target other intergovernmental organizations several times, groups like the United Nations, groups like the International Federation for the Red Cross, and other IGOs of a similar nature. So I was waiting and watching, and they activated some of their infrastructure, and to my dismay, what we found was a live attack on the World Health Organization on 13 March.
Wow. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up here in just a moment. So what are some basic tips on how people can practice good cyber hygiene on a regular basis, and especially now in this environment that we're in?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, I think that we have to be realistic about this, too. I mean, we can rely on our security departments within our organizations, our CISOs, but ultimately, I think, you know, we have to acknowledge that there is never going to be a technology that is going to be 100% effective with respect to stamping out fraud and abuse and phishing scams. Phishing scams have been around for a really, really long time for good reason. And what we're seeing now is to a certain extent, old wine in a new bottle, but things are more sophisticated. There are certain low-tech things that the malicious actors can do to increase the probability that those phishing lures get through to us. What I think we need to do is to be very skeptical, to recognize that our technologies and controls and processes, well, they may be excellent, they may be effective, they're not going to be 100% effective, and that is certainly going to be the case when we're dealing with the exploitation of certain psychological triggers, human triggers, that relate to this global health pandemic we are experiencing with the coronavirus. So I think rely on technology to a certain extent, but that gray matter that we have between our brains, between our ears, rather, and hopefully within our brains as well, is actually, I think, the most advanced piece of technology we have with respect to sniffing out fraud. If something doesn't feel right, trust your instincts, report it to your information security departments, share intelligence with each other, because, you know, when you report this information to, let's say, your colleagues, your information security departments, you're sharing intelligence. Mm-hmm. That's the way that we're going to get over this thing. We are all in it together. We've got to share what we know, and we'll make it through.
All right. Well, that's information security attorney Alexander Urbelis. He is partner and founder of Blackstone Law Group in New York. Alex, thanks for speaking with us, and stay safe.
Only a pleasure. Thank you. You too, Susie.